And the king signed the law that anybody who would ask anything of anybody else, even a Getchka, and not ask it of the king for 30 days, would be thrown into the pit of lions. And the officers wanted to be this way because if Daniel would be the one, the king would want to change his mind. Can the king change his mind now? No, he can never change his mind. The law has to be carried out. And the officers left the meeting after the king signed the law, and they're laughing. We have such a smart, perfect plan. That nobody can stop this, not even the king himself. The king painted himself into a corner, and now the king can't get out of it. And Kinelach, now the officers go spying on Daniel in order to bring the report against him to the king. Now, they knew that Daniel davens 3 times a day to Hashem. They knew that. Because they'd seen Daniel davening, taking out a sitter and davening, and they used to know he's davening to Hashem 3 times a day, and he wouldn't miss because Daniel was a tzaddik. But they have to get it in such a way they can report it to the king, and the king even can see for himself. He doesn't believe it. Now, Daniel in his house had a special room for davening, and that room was full of windows. And the windows were open towards Yerushalayim, in that direction. And Daniel would daven many times in that room, and you could even see him through the windows. Oh, perfect! You can even see him davening through the windows. Ah, there he's davening right now. It's the morning, yeah. Look, he's davening. He's got those boxes on his head. What's that called? Tefillin? Yeah, tefillin. He's got that tablecloth on his head with the strings coming out. What's that called? Talisi. It's over his, what's that little hat? A harmonica? Yarmulke. He's got his yarmulke. He's got his talis with the tefillin. He's davening with the sitter. Oh, boy, oh, boy. When is the next time he davens? Yeah, when is it? Yeah, sometime in the afternoon when the sun goes down. What's that called? Mincha. Minka, yeah, something like that. Minka, I don't know what it is. Something like that. And now the officers go to tell Daryavesh, the king. King, we saw somebody break your law. Now, that day, all over the kingdom, the officers had announced the law. Of course, with the trumpets, dee-dee-dee-dee! Everyone should know there's a law now from Daryavesh, the king, that everybody has to know he's the greatest of all the kings, and everybody has to know his kingdom is very great. No one is allowed to ask anything of anybody else, and nobody's even allowed to ask of your Getchka what you need. Only if you need something, you ask Daryavesh. And whoever doesn't listen to the law is going to be thrown into the pit of lions. And all the people heard that and they said, oh, we have to ask Daryavesh. Oh boy, put my Getchka away, forget it, put it in the garbage, who needs it? I have to ask Daryavesh, I'm afraid, I don't want to be thrown into the lions. And Daniel is davening in his room. They go to the king, they say, king, we have a person who broke your law already. And according to your law, you must have him thrown in the pit of lions. Daryavesh says, who is it? It's Daniel, your officer. Your own officer is not listening to the law. It's Daniel, your officer. You see, he's no good. You have to get rid of him. He's not asking of you. He's over there in his special room with the windows, and he's davening to Hashem. You see, he doesn't believe in you. You're nothing. Only from Hashem. And Daryavesh got very sad because he knew that Daniel davens to Hashem, and he knew that Daniel could also be a good officer and also help the king, and there's no problem to daven to Hashem also and to also be good to the king, because Daryavesh, as we said, was not a bad king. He wasn't making people doing bad things like Nebuchadnezzar was. And Darius did not realize that his gzeira would be right against Daniel. And Daniel was davening to Hashem, asking from Hashem, and not Darius. So they said to Darius, you must punish according to the law, Daniel, there's no way out of it. And you can't change your mind, you sign it into a law. Darius says, I don't believe it. How can you prove to me that Daniel is doing anything wrong? Maybe Daniel is not doing anything wrong. And they said, King, come to his house. The sun is going down. Because the whole day, Darius was trying to talk them out of it and trying to come to some way of saving Daniel, but it didn't work. They said, we'll prove it to you. Let's go to his house with all those windows. You'll see for yourself. He's davening, what's it called? Minke. Minha. What is it? Mine. They couldn't say Mincha because, you know, they couldn't pronounce it. And they took Darius to his house. He looked through the windows, and sure enough, Daniel is saying Ashrei, and then he goes to Shmona Esrei, and he's davening to Hashem. Well, Darius had no choice. Daniel has to be thrown to the lions. The officers took Daniel right away. In fact, they did it right away, as the sun was still going down, hadn't set yet, and they took him to the pit of lions. They opened up the pit of lions, and Darius had to throw Daniel into the pit of lions. And he said, I hope that your Hashem saves you from the lions. But of course he thinks in his mind, how can anybody be saved from 1,000 hungry lions? And as Darius walked away from the pit of lions, he began to worry about something also besides the lions. He says, maybe, who knows what can happen, some kind of a miracle from this God that Daniel always davens to. Maybe he could save him from the lions. But there's a bigger danger than even the lions. And it's all the different officers that hate Daniel. Because Darius knows that this whole thing is a plan from the other officers, because they're jealous of Daniel. So Darius starts thinking, what happens in the middle of the night if the other officers will come and throw knives and throw things at Daniel and kill him, even if the lions don't kill him? Maybe the other officers will kill him, because the hole is open and they can throw things down there and kill Daniel. Wouldn't it be nice if I could plug up the hole with something? The only problem was, the perfect thing to plug up such a hole would be a big rock. Now, the king could have anything he wants. Can the king get a big rock?
Yeah.
No. You know why? We're talking about a place called Babel. Who remembers in Parshas Noach, what was missing? What could you not find in Babel?
Rocks.
Rocks. There's only mud, and there were no rocks over there. That was a place that there were no rocks. Now, Kinelach, Darius was walking, and he was crying, and he felt bad for Daniel being with the lions. And as he's walking and thinking, wouldn't it be wonderful if you just plug up the hole? All of a sudden, he found a big, big rock that was perfect, the right size, to plug up the hole. Hey, look! A rock! Here in the middle of nowhere in Babel. And he made his servants pick up the rock and carry it and plug up the hole. Now, where in the world did that rock come from? You know where it came from? Malachim brought it from Eretz Israel. Who is in Eretz Israel? Do you see rocks in Eretz Israel? Oh boy, do you see rocks. Everywhere there are stones and rocks. Malachim brought the rocks from Eretz, the rock, this big rock from Eretz Israel, and they put it right there in Babel. And they went away before Darius got there. And Darius was going exactly right over there. That's why they put it over there. And he found it. And they had prepared that rock. And now the opening to the pit was closed. And Darius went home. And he was crying. And he said to everybody, come in the morning back to see what happened to Daniel in the pit of the lions. Now, what was happening in the pit of the lions? You ready to hear? This is what happened. As soon as Daniel got down there, Kinelach, not that he got afraid of the lions were afraid of him. Why? Because we learn in Bereishis, when Hashem made Adam, He gave him the Tzelem Elohim. He was created in the form of Hashem. Just like Hashem is Halak, and has Halak HaKoychus, He gave Halakite and He gave Koychus to Adam. And Adam is the Tzelem Elohim. Now Hashem also said, if a person is going to behave like a person, the animals will be afraid of him. Right? They will be afraid of you. These lions, when they looked at Daniel, they saw a tzaddik, and they saw the Tzelem Elohim. And right away they were afraid. When is the only time that an animal could chas v'shalom do damage to a person and not be afraid of a person? If the person is not Tzelem Elohim, if they're not acting like a person, if they're chas v'shalom doing a Vedas, and they lose their Tzelem Elohim, their Halakite, then when the animal looks at a person, they see another animal. And they're not afraid of another animal. If the person is acting and behaving like an animal, the animals look at him as an animal, and they're not afraid, they might even start up with him. But these lions, they saw Daniel. And they saw Tzaddik. Not only that, Hashem sent down a malach into the pit of lions, and the malach all of a sudden starts speaking to the lions. Okay, lions, behave. Have derech eretz for Daniel. Don't make noise. You should know who's over here. When the lion says in lion talk, who was this? This is some kind of a person. Maybe we shouldn't have to be afraid of a person. Well, the malach said, are you afraid? How does one lion feel about another lion? The lions amongst themselves, do they fight with each other?
No.
Not usually. A lion has respect for another lion. So the malach says, hey, even if you don't understand the Chumash and about Tzelem Elohim, you have to be afraid of this person because he's also a lion. This is also a lion. In the pit is a lion. What do you mean a lion? I thought you just said it's a person. He's a lion and he's a bigger lion than you are. So you have to be afraid of him as a big lion. What's he saying? A big lion? Yeah, you know why? It says in Shulchan Aruch in the beginning that a person should be yizgaber ka'ari. A person should be strong like a lion against the Yetzirah. Who remembers learning that in the beginning of Shulchan Aruch? Who remembers learning that in the beginning of Shulchan Aruch that there's certain animals that a person should copy? For example, it says, you should be quick like an eagle. You should be az kenomer. You should be strong like a leopard. And it also says you should be strong like a lion against the Yetzirah. Daniel was strong like a lion against his Yetzirah, and he listened to Shulchan Aruch and he listened to Hashem, and therefore the Malach says, this is a bigger lion than you are because he's Gaber Ka'ari. He's like a lion, he's like a big lion, like a gigantic lion, because he conquers his Yetzirah. So you have to be afraid of him as a Tzelem Elohim and as a big lion. Oh, he's both. He's a Tzelem Elohim and a big lion both. Ooh, these lions got afraid. And they didn't start up with him and they didn't touch him. And the lions did not touch him. The Rishayim did not touch him. And overnight, he had a beautiful night there with all the lions. They were quiet. And they were looking at the Halak HaTzadik. Not only that, but Hashem didn't even want Daniel to be hungry in the pit of lions. So what did he do? Hashem made another mess. In Eretz Yisrael, there lived at the time a Navi named Habakkuk. And Habakkuk was a Navi, and he owned fields. And in the fields, he grew all kinds of food. Hashem brought Habakkuk and his workers from the fields, with all the food that they were bringing in from the fields, and instead of bringing it in to the house, into Eretz Israel, they brought it into the pit of lions. And they brought it to Daniel in Babel. And they all sat down to have a nice meal. And the lions watched, maybe the chapterine a little bit of the meal also. So Habakkuk, the Navi from Eretz Israel, and his workers and Daniel sat around having a nice meal. Maybe they sang a few nigunim, maybe they made l'chaim. And the lions are watching. And in the morning, Dayavesh came to the pit because he wants to see what happened overnight to Daniel. And he calls down, I guess he takes off the rock and he calls down into the pit, "Daniel, Daniel, I hope Hashem saved you, the Hashem that you're davening to 3 times a day. He didn't have an answer. He didn't hear anything. He starts to cry, "Oy vey, it must be that the lions ate up Daniel. I don't hear anything. Daniel, Daniel, I hope Hashem made a miracle for you. You always talk about Hashem being the greatest. You always talk about Hashem being the king of the world. And it is the Hashem of the world who can do anything. So that means Hashem could do for you a mess. Maybe he made for you a mess." And the second time Daniel said, "King, I'm down here." Now, why didn't he answer the first time? He was busy saying Kriyat Shema. Kriyat Shema. He was saying the Shema in the morning. Are you allowed to interrupt in the middle of saying Shema if you're saying Shema in the morning? No. So he couldn't interrupt. And the second time he said to Daryavesh, "Yes, I'm here." And Daryavesh said, "You're alive." He looked down. He saw the lions were all around. And Daniel is fine. "Hey, hey, a miracle. Hey there, a miracle. Everybody has to come to see the miracle. Hey, this is exciting. Yes, Hashem is a great king who makes miracles. Hey there, look." And Daryavesh runs to call all of his officers, the 120 officers with the other 2 officers, and he says, "Look, Daniel is alive." And they come around and look in the pit. They can't believe it. And then they said, "Oh, it's not a miracle at all, King. You know, it's no big deal." Now listen, of course, what happened over here. The king did his part of the law. The law said that anybody who does not listen to the king, he has to get thrown into the pit of lions, right? Did Daryavesh do the law?
Yes.
Yes, finished. He did the law. Now, is it Daryavesh's fault that the lions did not eat up Daniel? No. But now, the other officers, they say, "King, this is no miracle at all. The lions were not hungry, that's all. If the lions aren't hungry, they're not going to eat up a person. You have to wait longer till they're hungry. It's not a miracle. You just have to wait longer till they're hungry. Then they'll eat up Daniel." And the king says, "Oh, you think that the reason they didn't eat him because they're not hungry. Let's see if they're hungry or not." And he called his officers, the other officers, not the 120, just his servants. And the king calls his servants and he says, "Servants, bring here all of the families of the 120 officers with their wives and with their children, and bring the 120 officers with the other 2 officers, bring them all here, and we're going to throw all of them into the pit, and we're going to see if the lions are hungry or not. If they're not hungry, they're not going to eat also these officers with their families. And if they are hungry, boy, will they have a nice meal." And the other officers, the 120 officers and the other 2 officers started to scream and to shake. No, don't throw us into the pit of lions. But you say nothing will happen because they're not hungry, right? So let's go. And all of the 120 officers, the troublemakers, who made trouble against Daniel, plus the other 2 big officers who made big trouble against Daniel, plus their wives and their children and all their families, were thrown into the pit of over 1,000 lions. And what do you think? The lions were not hungry, or they were hungry? Ooh, they were starving. And, of course, you can only imagine what in the world happened to those officers with their families. But, of course, they deserved it because they were such troublemakers. Like we learned by Lech Lecha, whoever gives a Yid a bracha, he gets a bracha. Whoever, Chas HaShalom, makes trouble for a Yid, gets trouble from Hashem, right? Because going against the Yid is like going against the Shem. And Kinelach, Daniel remained a great officer by King Daryavesh. And after Daryavesh, there was another king named Koresh. And Daniel was also an officer by Koresh. He was an officer by so many kings. And there's even an opinion that in the time later of Ahasuerus, do you remember Harvoina? Who was the officer that came in the end and said to the king Ahasuerus that Haman built a big thing to hang to hang Mordechai 50 amos high, and the king said they should hang Haman on it. There's an opinion that says even that was Daniel. He lived to be very, very old. And then Daniel was no longer an officer, and he was just serving Hashem day and night, learning Torah and doing mitzvahs. Now that, Kinelach, is the end of the story of Daniel.
Kinelach, in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, that Eibishter was upset at the Yidden for certain Avedis, and like it happened in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, the Eibishter had to pick Shluchim to go and punish the Jewish people because they were not doing yet the proper tshuva. Hashem gave chances, but now it came the time of the punishments. In the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, Hashem chose the king Nebuchadnezzar of Babel. And he was Hashem's shliach. He didn't do it by himself. If Hashem wouldn't have wanted it to happen, Nebuchadnezzar had no koyach to go against the Yidden. And at the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, Hashem picked Titus, the king of Rome. And Titus went, Kinelach, and destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash on Tisha B'Av. Just like the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on Tisha B'Av. And Titus goes and he takes all the beautiful kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, the silver and the gold and the beautiful things, and he tells his servants and his slaves, load up the royal boat, we're going to take everything out of the Beis HaMikdash and we're going to take it to Rome and make a big parade. I'm going to show off how strong I am, that I went against Hashem and I beat Hashem because I destroyed his Beis HaMikdash. It means I'm stronger than Hashem. Ha ha. And he was laughing. And he says, when I get back to my city, Rome, I'm going to show that I'm stronger than all kings in the world. And I'm stronger than Hashem because I knocked down his Beis HaMikdash. Hee hee. Nobody's greater than me, not even Hashem. Big Baal Gaiva, Shlech the Rasha that he was. And they loaded up the royal boat next to the ocean and they decorated it so it would be beautiful for Titus. And now Titus went on board the boat and the boat starts sailing in the ocean to Rome. And Titus is walking around the boat feeling so proud, so happy, and looking at all the things that he stole out of the Beis HaMikdash and thinking about the big parade that he's going to make. And all of a sudden, the wind starts to blow, the clouds start to fill the sky, the waves start to get big in the ocean, and it's a big storm in the ocean. And the boat, the ship is going up and down, and it's getting knocked around by the waves and blown around by the wind. And the storm was a terrible storm. And the people on the boat were scared. They thought the boat was going to break apart or sink or turn over. And Titus goes over to the edge of the boat and he starts screaming, "Aha! Hashem! You're making the big storm. Hashem is making the storm. Now, by the way, one thing I didn't tell you. Why did Titus have this feeling that he destroyed the Beis HaMikdash? He took all the things for himself. He felt it was his koyach and his smartness and his armies. Could he have done it by himself? Or he was only a shliach for Hashem, only like, here I'm picking up a pen. If I write with a pen, it writes. If I put it down, it can't do anything. Hashem was using him as a tool in order to do something for Hashem that Hashem had to be done, that Hashem had to do it. And he picked Titus. Did Titus realize that? Or Titus thinks he did it by himself? He thinks he did it by himself. He thinks that he has his own koyach to do it. That's why he turned into such a big balgaive. And Titus goes now by the edge of the boat and he starts screaming, "Ah, Hashem, you're making the storm. You're trying to get me. Well, you should know, Hashem, you couldn't get me on the land. I'm the strongest on the land. Hashem, you're not strong on the land. I knocked down your base and Mikdash. I took away all your things. You couldn't stop me. So now you're trying to get me on the ocean. Maybe you only work on the ocean. You don't work on the land." Now, why does Titus say Hashem only works on the ocean? Because he says, "Look, Hashem, you wanted to punish people a long time ago in the time of Noach. What did you use? You use water. You made a flood. You use water. Then, in the time of Paro, the Yidden got a Mitzrayim, and you want to punish the Mitzrayim? So how did you do it? By the Yamsuf. You made them drown in the Yamsuf. Again, you're using water. Maybe you're Hashem, you only use water. You only have a power with water, but on the land you can't do anything. Well, it looks like I'm the boss of the land. And let's just see if you can get me in the ocean. Use the whole ocean against me. Let's just see if you could do it. Maybe I'm the boss of the ocean too." And a voice came out from the Himmel, and it says to Titus, "You big Rasha, don't you realize Hashem can get you on the land also? Hashem only let you get away with this for a reason. And not only let you get away with this, He just didn't punish you there on the spot. He could have. And now you're going around, such a balgaiva, thinking you're greater than Hashem. Hashem is going to show you that even the little, teeniest, tiniest thing on the land, even that is greater than you. Not that you're the greatest one on the land, the littlest, teeniest, tiniest animal on the land is greater than you. Even the littlest fly is greater than you." And Titus starts to laugh. And he got even more gaiva than before. Kinelach, this is what Titus did. After the voice got done speaking, the wind stopped blowing, the waves stopped crashing, the clouds stopped making rain, the sky cleared, everything calmed down, and it became a beautiful day. The storm disappeared. And Titus laughed. "Ah, everything is fine. The boat is fine. All the silver and gold things are fine. I'm fine." And he starts bragging even more than before how great he is. He's the greatest in the whole earth and even on the oceans. Finally, Titus and the big ship and all the people, they reached Rome. And they started their parade. And they're going to make a big, big party to celebrate. And they make the parade through the streets, and everybody comes out, of course, to say how great Titus is, and to throw flowers on him, and to blow trumpets, and to make everything beautiful. But of course, when Titus came back from the big trip over the ocean, he was all schwitzy, and before he goes to the party, he He wants to clean himself off and take a nice bath. So he goes to the bathhouse, and they bring his royal towel and his royal soap and his royal shampoo and his royal clothes to put on after his bath, and he takes his bath. Maybe he's got his rubber duck in there and his toys. And then he comes out of his bath and he goes along with the parade to the palace, and everybody's cheering, yay, Titus, and he's showing off all the things in the base of Mikdash, and he's getting more and more gaiva, how great he is and how wonderful he is and how powerful he is, how strong he is and how smart he is. And then in the palace, before they start the party, they want to give him a royal cold drink that he should feel good. And they take the fanciest goblet, you know, a cup of wine, a beautiful becher, a beautiful cup that he pours wine, that he has his wine covered with diamonds and jewels. And they fill it up with the most expensive wine, and now they give it into his hand.